Good evening, you guys. I'm K2, Romeo, India Whiskey. At this time, we begin the tech mess. If any of you guys are still awake, you have to roll on field day operation for the last 24 hours. Main purpose of the TechNet, as you guys know, is education. And the curious radio amateurs gather at this time and teach each other how all this wireless equipment works. TechNet is broken up into three sections. First section is people signing in with questions or comments. They give us your call letters, your name, and the word yes means you do have a question or a comment for the net. I don't know why I'm so noisy here tonight. Second section is run by Roy in C2GS. Dr. Roy runs the mailbag and science talk. And the third section is run by Paul, WS2N, in which you find out what the latest launches of NASA and the other space agencies are going to be. Nice job. So at this time, I'm going to take check-ins. So if you do have a question or a comment for the net, you need that sign in just because you're listening. After 36 years, we believe somebody is listening. So give me a call with the name. A sign in would sound like this. WS2N, Paul, and yes. So give me your call letter's name, and yes, if you do have a question or a comment. K2 Romeo, India Whiskey, for listening.
WHYY, Joe, yes.
Very fine, Joe. Who's the next person to check in?
KA2YHY, yes.
KA2YHY, some mysterious person who didn't tell us his name. Okay. Very fine, Steve. Who's the next person going to sign? Check in. Give me your call letters and name right now.
K2RLW5.
K2RLW, Bob. Okay, we got you, Bob. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name right now. Okay, we probably have more than enough to get going. So, Joe? The guy who usually asks us some pretty interesting questions. Go right ahead, Joe. So, K2RYY, K2RIW.
I hear your signal on the radio, so it doesn't sound very good. That's something else. I have a comment and a question. The comment is directed to anybody, including you, who's an over-the-air TV reception type of person. Some of these channels in New York are going to recently change, and I saw this on one of the locally advertised TVs channels about the change. It's tvanswers.org. The whole word spelled out, tvanswers.org. If you go to that website, you'll be able to find out answers to the question you may have about channels moving around and so forth. It may also cover different areas of the country too, so I didn't check it out, but I'm sure it's I'm sure I'll have something locally, because I saw an ad on not an ad, but the message info on Channel 2 a couple of times about them moving their frequency on August 1st at 1 p.m. So if you're not retuned, rescanned for them, you're going to miss them. And that's the comment. And then I have a question. Ready for the question?
Fire away, Joe.
I should ask this question in its entirety, but if I simply tell you what I found, then I can put the pieces back together for you. Why do I get a change of 6 decibels when going from vertical to horizontal? Now, would you like to know the rest of the part of that question?
No, we don't need that.
Fire away.
I'm pulling your leg, Joe. So, you went from horizontal to vertical when you were doing what? Probably a little more information there.
Okay, what I did was I brought the V2RY. What I did was I brought my service out, mounted out next to my car, and I was checking the noise input on 6 meters as my mobile sees it through my mag mount. And it's about actually higher than the house. The house is, I think I measured 14 to 16, and the mobile said it was about 18. But what was funny was, after I got this reading, of 18 dB degradation on, with the noise coming in from 6 meters compared to what the receiver should perform by itself. I reached up on the roof and grabbed the antenna loading coil. I said, let me just see if I touch the antenna what happens. Nothing happened. So I took the mag mount and then actually pulled it off the car. Still nothing happened. I turned the antenna horizontally, not touching the car, but horizontally, holding my hand, and the noise quieting went up in the receiver. I was listening to it, so I turned down the generator again to get the same noise quieting, and it dropped about 6 decibels. So then I confirmed this by also taking the mag mount, putting it on the side of my car, and it's about, 3 or 4 feet from the ground, but it's horizontal. But the noise dropped 6 decibels. So I had an 18 dB degradation on the antenna vertical on the top of the car on 6 meters, around 52,500, and it dropped by 6 dB when I put the antenna horizontal. What do you think is causing this? Back to you.
What dropped 6 dB? Noise or the signal that you were transmitting it? Now, were you transmitting a signal from the house to the car, and the signal dropped by 6 dB? Or noise dropped by 6 dB. You probably said it and I didn't get it, Joe. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I used a coupler like you said, which is a better idea than trying to use it from the antenna to the antenna, because then you don't have reflections or other things getting in the way. So I used the RF tap, and knowing what the RF tap loss across was, I checked it first with a 50-ohm load, and I got my set point with the generator, and the generator's going to go up about 40 dB or so. Tap. So then I connected the antenna and placed a 50-ohm load, and I had to turn the generator of 18 decibels. So I figured, okay, that's my noise floor degradation coming in the mobile on 6 meters. So as I turned this antenna horizontal from vertical, that reading went down to 12 decibels of degradation instead of 18. So it dropped by 6 decibels as I went from vertical to horizontal. Now, I read in different books that noise is, they call it noise is inherently vertically polarized. Do you think that's specifically what it was, or do you think something else is involved here? Back to you.
I think there's at least two things going on here, Joe. Noise might be really loud or vertical than horizontal, and when you take your mag mount and mount it on the side of your car and the antenna is horizontal, a horizontal antenna or 2 feet above the ground has a different antenna pattern and a different impedance. You probably didn't check the standing wave ratio of that antenna when it was horizontally mounted, mag mount horizontally on the side of the car, if I understand correctly. Yeah. Is that true, Joe?
No, I didn't do that. I could have done that, but it wasn't. It was just something I had discovered just sort of accidentally. I mean, I could actually do it to, you know, confirm what you think is going on. You think the resonance change of the antenna, or the return loss of the whole antenna circuit changed dramatically from going vertical to horizontal, right?
I didn't say dramatically. There's obviously going to be a change. You don't know. Right now, we don't know how much. Now, if I understand correctly, what you're listening to on the receiver, that's not clear to me yet. Are you just listening to atmospheric noise, or are you listening to a signal? I suspect you're listening to a signal on 52525 being transmitted to you or from a repeater. What were you listening to other than noise, Joe? Go ahead.
The RF carrier coming out of my service monitor that was going into the RF tap. I'll explain that again. I put the RF tap in the antenna circuit going to the radio with another piece of cable. Terminated the RF tap with a 50 ohm impedance, and then on the actual tap, the port itself of this RF device, it has about 40 dB drop on 6 meters approximately across the coupling, capacitive coupling. Okay, so I had a certain reading, which is about 40 decibels of change from what the receiver, the normal receiver sensitivity is. The receiver is about normally minus 115, so I had to go up 40 decibels above that signal level to get the same quieting in the receiver again with a 50 ohm load on the end of this tap. So then I took the RF, the 50 ohm load off the one end of the tap, put the antenna in place of it. Now I had to turn the signal generator up 18 decibels further. So that's my actual noise floor that I'm trying to deal with. It makes the receiver at 115 be worse by a factor of like 18 decibels. It's putting up until into the 90s, okay? So when I put the antenna on the car, I put it horizontal instead of vertical accidentally. This factor went down only 12 dB of degradation, so I dropped 6 dB of degradation.
Okay, you're injecting a signal into the 40 dB tap from your service monitor. The word degradation is a little bit ambiguous here. You had to turn that signal louder or lower in amplitude in order to reach the same threshold, Joe, when the antenna was horizontal. Go ahead.
I had to turn the signal generator down because when I put the antenna horizontal, as soon as I did that, going from vertical to horizontal, I got more quieting, instantly got more quieting to the receiver. You could hear it, like, you know, the noise disappear and it went, you know, less, much less. So I turned the generator down by about 6 dB to get the same 20 decibels of quieting. So I had a drop of about 6 decibels noticed between vertically polarized antenna and when the antenna was actually horizontally polarized. Can't do that in my house because that would be impossible to do that. So I just discovered this quite by accident in the mobile installation. So it got me kind of curious why it drops 6 decibels from going vertical, the antenna being vertical, to the antenna going horizontal.
Yeah, horizontal antenna, mag mount mounted on the side of a car or a truck, is giving you a lot of ground bounce that vertical polar, what I'm looking for now, the antenna pattern no longer favors the horizon. It's now more of a near vertical incident skywave antenna, if you know what I mean. You're looking straight up. Result pattern is the ground bounce, the horizontal polarization, and you're not even a wavelength above the ground. So you get a little bit of change in the standing wave ratio of the antenna. You get a significant change in the antenna pattern. The whip on the automobile, vertically polarized, is favoring the horizon, and it's got a null straight up. With your horizontal antenna, you've now got a peak straight up and then a null on the horizon. Since an awful lot of the 6 meter noise is coming from the horizon and you're now attenuating it by antenna pattern, that's a factor. I think that's a major one, Joe. I think the fact that you now have an antenna pattern not favoring the horizon is why you're getting less noise. So I think what you've measured is real. There's really less noise with that antenna pattern. My best guess. W2RYY, P2RAW.
Okay, to go further in this discussion, if I did that with my house antenna, if I could go up 30 feet and take my antenna on the house and put it horizontal instead of vertical, do you think I'd achieve the same thing or not? And I guess further on, asking another part of the question is saying, how would you do it? How would you determine the noise polarity coming in between vertical and horizontal?
Well, one of the big factors here is that the mag mount on the side of the car, a couple of feet above the ground, is giving you a very simple antenna pattern with one very broad lobe favoring straight up and essentially a null on the horizon. From the top of your tower, a horizontally polarized antenna is now going to have a elevation pattern that's very different. There's going to be a number of lobes there because you're now mounting that horizontal antenna a number of wavelengths above the ground. Assuming the Earth is a kind of a mirror and you get a reflection off of it, making a significant change in the vertical antenna pattern. That makes the comparison on the top of the tower versus the side of the car difficult to relate, if you know what I mean. You've got two very different vertical antenna patterns, Joe. W2RYY, T2RAW.
Okay, how would you do it?
What you did is a good test. Well, we got a problem. We want to know how much horizontal noise versus vertical noise. And you're probably talking about broadband atmospheric noise. You're not talking about man-made noise, are you, Joe? If you had the receiver set in the AM mode, do you think you'd be hearing clicks and pops and 60 cycle noise and fluorescent lighting and whatever in your neighborhood. Do you think the noise was man-made or galactic, so to speak? Over to you, Joe.
The radio doesn't do AM. It's an FM radio only, commercial FM radio. Doesn't do AM.
Is there a way you could have used your service monitor as an AM rating?
Sure. It has multi-modes in it. But the thing is, if I take the service monitor and simply use it with the spectrum analyzer, even in the house, hooking up to the 6-meter antenna, depending on the sweep selected on the analyzer, if I go up as, say, 1 meg per division horizontally, the noise is about minus 85, minus 90 approximately, with some noise spikes being even higher than that. If I increase the band, if I increase the sweep to like 10 or 50 megs per division, it goes even further higher than that. It's not like a really like a lab analyzer, but it does indicate that the noise floor is well above a microvolt, way above a microvolt, as far as just what you see, what the analyzer is capable of seeing.
So I think you're saying the noise you get from your antenna into the service monitor is above the, what's the word I'm looking for, the basic noise figure of the service monitor. If your service monitor is a little bit like a spectrum analyzer, many of the spectrum analyzers start off with a 25 or 30 dB noise figure, in which case they may not be able to see atmospheric noise. Your service monitor might have a preamp, might be a hell of a lot more sensitive. Do you have a guess as to what's the basic sensitivity of your service monitor, Joe, go ahead.
Well, the service monitor has a spectrum analyzer built in. It actually has a receiver running at the same time as two different circuits running off the same local oscillator that you can cause the sweep. The analyzer actually running, I mean, losing the receiver portion of it actually listened on a particular frequency. In reality, the service monitor really cannot hear much below about 2.2 microvolts, give or take two and a half microvolts, something like that. That makes it go down to about something like minus 105 here into the noise of the analyzer. Okay? That's with nothing coming in the antenna input. When I connect it to the antenna input, that background noise goes up to about minus 90, give or take. Maybe a little less than maybe 90, 92, something like that, just the average noise across the whole band. Well, like you see, that's the background, but you see this like AC line noise, which has very, very narrow spikes that are a lot higher in amplitude. So that's something above the that the background noise I'm looking at also at the same time.
If I remember correctly, minus 107 dBm is 1 microvolt, and I think you're saying you see noise like minus 90-something. I think you're telling me your basic noise on 6 meters from your antenna is a significant number of microvolts. Is that what you're saying, Joe? Go ahead.
Yes, I have been saying this every time I brought this particular question up, trying to measure the actual noise, the actual performance of the receiver connected with 6 meter antenna. It's degraded by at least 16 dB in the house, above like the normal receiver sensitivity of minus 115, which is about like, 113 is like 0.15. I mean, excuse me, 113 is 0.5 microvolts. So the receiver gets degraded as far as its on-the-air sensitivity by a factor of at least 16 decibels. Yeah, I can see it on the analyzer. The problem is the analyzer is not sensitive. It's not anywhere near sensitive as a commercial radio to see something that down to minus 125 or 127. It can't see that. It's just not capable of doing that.
Yeah, if I understand you correctly, your service monitor, although it's the input connector from the antenna, is going both through a receiver and a spectrum analyzer. The spectrum analyzer is less sensitive than the receiver. Is that true, Joe?
No, they're about the same. In the FM mode or AM mode, if you put a signal in, you can put a signal in locally from the duplex port. You really can't see it down much below minus 105. You can't see it on the analyzer. Even if you select a narrow span, like about 1 kilohertz per division horizontally, below 105, you just don't see it. You don't hear it in the receiver either. The receiver's is about the same level of sensitivity as the spectrum analyzer, give or take. So you actually can't see something like in a microvolt, half a microvolt. Can't see that. It's down to the noise.
If you inject a signal of half a microvolt while the antenna is looking at the on-the-air noise, you're saying the signal is considerably below the noise, if I understand correctly. Sure would be nice if your antenna at the house, which I'm guessing is vertically polarized, if it had been, say, a three-element Yagi, where you could rotate the antenna around its boom. In other words, the middle of the boom is mounted in an alliance rotator, and therefore you could rotate the whole antenna from horizontal to vertical and everything in between while watching noise. Although there's an antenna change in antenna vertical antenna pattern, that still would be interesting. So, from your house, you get a significant number of microvolts of noise. The normal magnet mounted on the car in the ordinary way, does it see more or less noise than you get from the house, Joe? Go ahead.
Well, I tested out my driveway. You know where my driveway is compared to my house. I'm not really near the power lines too much. Not any closer than the house in me. And it seemed in the particular spot I checked it out in the driveway, it was seeing more degradation than the house antenna was.
Wow.
Yeah, Lou, I'm seeing that the we're not getting a signal out of Sheldon. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Joe, what node are you connected? Are you on RLP, and what node are you connecting to?
Okay, now I'm seeing a signal out of Sheldon. My previous transmission to you, nothing was coming out of Sheldon when I talked. I'm running full duplex. In other words, I'm transmitting on 2.5 and listening on 8.5. Does that answer your question? I'm not listening to a node. Maybe the node is at my house. Over to you, Luke.
Well, what I heard you on 3.75, no problem. I couldn't hear Joe. So I'm curious as to how Joe is getting in. I assume it's RLP, but I don't see him on the reflector. So, Joe, how are you coming in?
I'm not going to discuss that here over the air. I think RAW understands what I'm doing. If he would have read one of my emails from about a month or so ago, you'll understand what I was doing. Otherwise, I'm taping something off the air. If I use my VHF radio, it wipes out my converter.
All right, well, then I don't know if we have an issue or not, then, Dick, but you said you couldn't hear yourself, so that would be an issue. You understand we're going through some personnel changes and equipment changes, and we're going to have some bumps along the way, but we're giving it a college try, so there you go. All right, just looking for some information, but my feeling was I couldn't hear Joe, but I could hear you on Sheldon. That's it. Continue. I don't want to interrupt. Just NY2H.
If you want me to tell you exactly what I'm doing over the air, I can do that, but I'm sure you wouldn't like that being done.
Okay, I think I understand what you're doing just by that statement. That's fine. I think we're on the same page, same wavelength. No pun intended. There you go. No, don't say anything on the air. All right. I think I got you. All right. NY2H. Go ahead, Dick.
How are you getting in now, Lou? I've got some scratchy noise on my signal. I hear some scratchy noise on your signal. Go ahead.
All right, this will be better now because I'm on Sheldon. I was trying to get into Glen Oaks on 2.5. We have a little receiver issue we're going to address. That's going to be number one priority. I just got off the phone with Mr. Druckmann, and we have antenna versus transmission line versus antenna location issues, a whole bunch of RF activity where we are now, et cetera. So the first thing we're going to address is try to beef up the 2.5 receive, and then we'll go from there. So we're a little problematic with the 2.5. If you go into the hospital, it seems fine, clear, but when you voted into Glen Oaks, it's not so clear. So that's another whole issue, is the voting system, and we're going to have Mr. Kirschenbaum help us out with that one. So little by little, we'll get there. But right now, I'm on Selden. I probably sound a lot better.
Sure do, Lou. Was there a change in the power output of Glen Oaks in the last week or so? I think you're putting out more power than you were before. Go ahead.
We did an antenna swap. As you know, the antenna was either struck by lightning or there was some incident that occurred that put the antenna out. So we had an interim period up until last week where we were using an antenna of maybe half the size or length of what we traditionally have up there. And last week, give or take a couple of days, we have a superstation master up again. So that's why the output signal is improved again.
Okay, I knew about the antenna change, but even after the antenna was changed, I thought that when I measured receiver sensitivity, so to speak, you had full sensitivity, but what was coming out on 8.5 seemed to me below what it used to be. And so there isn't any change in the power output, no change in amplifier, final amplifier, or number of watts going to the antenna. Is that true, Lou? And by the way, when you're on Selden, I'm hearing you even on the input at Selden. I presume you're in Port Jeff right now. Over to you, Lou.
Y2H, yes, I am. Well, let me tell you, this wasn't a conscious effort to change the power level, as far as I know, and it's supposed to be running things through me now, and I haven't heard that. I did have a mishap a couple days ago where I had Selden stuck on for a couple of hours, so I don't know, maybe I intimidated the finals. I don't know. No, I don't have an answer for that, Dick. Sorry.
I'm not talking about the power output of Selden. I'm talking about the power output of Glen Oaks. So I think you're saying the normal power at Glen Oaks for the last month, no changes, but I think you're saying, Lou, go ahead.
Talking about Glen Oaks, and I'm not aware of any change in power output. Intentional change in power output. Again, if we have a transmission line issue or something like that, you know, this is what we're going to look into. So that's our next step in the process, is to square away the transmitter antenna transmission line system, including antenna location, you know, on the roof there, and the Glen Oaks receiving and the voting receiving. And we have a number of things on our plate, but that's, I think we'll put that as number one priority. So I'll be calling a meeting with about four or five individuals at their convenience, hopefully within the next few days, and we'll pick a plan and we'll execute it.
Very fine, Lou. Thank you, and hang in there. Getting back to Joe, the 1956 VHF handbook by Bill Orr compares horizontal versus vertical for VHF DX stations, and he makes it pretty clear that horizontal polarization has a huge superiority over vertical polarization when it comes to VHF DX. And I think it's got two components. Number one, an awful lot of the things that block a VHF signal, like vertically the mass of trees, the trunk of trees and buildings and whatever, they tend to be more obtrusive to a vertically polarized signal than to a horizontal. Second of all, the way ground bounce works is different, and the amount of noise that an antenna sees, horizontal versus vertical. You put it all together, you get a hell of a lot more DX on horizontal polarization versus vertical. So I think you are, with the measurements you're making, Joe, you're starting to see some of the ingredients that Bill Orr was reporting on in that 1956 VHF handbook. I suspect there is less atmospheric noise and less man-made noise to horizontal polarization than vertical. And when it comes to going through multiple miles of the environment, meaning trees and buildings and houses and water towers and whatever, horizontal gets through better than vertical. To me, KQRYY, KQRIW.
Okay. All right, so I guess you run this one out pretty good. There's not much more to say about it, right? I can't prove anything else about it. And, you know, I've heard from many other sources that horizontal works better on vertical or some bands, especially in the higher frequency bands like this, but it's just, it's kind of funny. And it goes back to the thing where I've heard that noise is inherently vertically polarized. What actually makes noise inherently vertically polarized?
The noise you're talking about right now, do you believe you're talking about atmospheric noise or man-made noise when you say it's inherently vertically polarized? It may be both. Now give me your feedback on that one, Joe.
Don't know. Say, they call it atmospheric noise because you have several things going on. You know, unlike what you're listening to the repeater right now. That's another whole thing by itself. Call it atmospheric noise. Why is it inherently seem to be more vertically polarized than horizontal? Or has this ever been proved out by somebody theoretically?
I think some of it's going to be local antenna pattern. Very few of us have the ability to mount a horizontally polarized antenna at an altitude which is an infinite number of wavelengths above the ground. The number of wavelengths your antenna horizontally polarizes above the ground dictates that first lobe of your antenna, the first vertical lobe in the antenna pattern, elevation antenna pattern. That first lobe gets lower to the ground as you raise the antenna more wavelengths above the ground. But we tend to have a null on the horizon for any reasonable length of any reasonable altitude mounting an antenna. And since the majority of atmospheric noise from our atmosphere is on that horizon, and you've got a null in the antenna pattern on the horizon, you're going to see less noise. Straight up, if we had the ability to have an extremely high-gain antenna, great big dish, and we measure the amount of noise we see with the antenna aimed at zenith versus the horizon, obviously you're going to get a lot more noise on the horizon for a couple of reasons. Some of the antenna pattern is looking at the Earth, and you're seeing KTB noise from the Earth. The other half of the antenna pattern is looking at the sky above the horizon, and you're going to see noise there. So that's some of what's going on. The fact that our antenna, our elevation antenna pattern changes so drastically when you go from horizontal to vertical, it makes the comparison kind of difficult. Man-made noise out of your power line system. Because the wires are horizontal, you're going to think that the noise out of the wires is horizontally polarized. Not necessarily true, because the wiring only has significant effective capture area as an antenna if the wire is resonant. When the wire is not a resonant length, it has an extremely small effective capture area. The best example of that, let me drop it. A horizontal dipole line 80 meters has a calculated effective capture area of 8,500 square feet. It's real. There's various ways you can confirm that. If your eyes operated at 80 meters and you stood up at a long distance and looked at your horizontal 80 meter dipole, you looked at it broadside, you'd see a great big black oval in space around that dipole, which would be 150 feet wide, 80 feet high or whatever. It would have 8,500 square feet of area. A signal on 80 meters coming into your environment, when it sees that great big oval, the majority of that signal hitting that oval ends up on the wire and goes down the feed line. The power line, Loco or Con Ed power line across the street from you at the exact same altitude casts a shadow on that antenna pattern of a couple square feet. Compared to 8,500 square feet, it's nothing. So that everybody thinks that the power line across the street is giving you a blockage. If Europe is in that direction, you think you're not going to hear Europe. Well, other than the noise that comes off that power line, you're going to hear Europe beautifully. It's non-resonant, therefore its effective capture area is essentially its physical area. A piece of wire, an inch in diameter, doesn't create very many square feet of area, unless it's resonant. So antennas take on a huge difference in effective capture area when they're resonant versus non-resonant. So that gives you a little bit of feeling so that the noise that's left coming off that wire is a certain voltage with reference to ground. Therefore, I think the noise coming off the power line is primarily vertically polarized. The majority of the power that you see is vertically polarized, is a guess on my part. I know this is not super clear. The V2LYY for comments, KQLIW.
Well, Well, I guess the more talk about it, the more it makes it clear. How come I don't hear you on either one of your remote sites? They're not up when you're talking. Something happened to them? Maybe that's why you're noisy into Glen Oaks.
I'm transmitting on 2-5 in the normal manner. And why right now I'm not getting any clicking noise is interesting. I haven't made any change. The way I'm running my system right now, Joe, is the way I've run it for the last X number of years. Over to you, Joe. Are you expecting to hear me on the input? Is that what you're complaining about?
No, I was expecting to hear you on the two remote sites you have in your system, and neither one of them is transmitting right now. Maybe NY2H has an answer for that one.
The two remote sites I've got on my system. What does that mean, Joe? I don't have a system with remote sites. Go ahead.
No. I really don't think you want me telling you specifically what I'm listening to. I'm listening to a couple of UHF frequencies, all right? Does that answer you something? You're only being received on Glen Oaks. There's nothing else in the out there to receive you right now. Was that meant to be like that right now?
No, I'm understanding what you're saying. Let's see if Lou has any comments on all of the above. NY2H, K2RIW.
No, I have no comments.
Very fine. Okay. I think with what knowledge we've got, what measurements you've made, we've got some guesses as to what's going on in your case, Joe. Any final comments before we go over to the next guy? RYY, K2RIW.
Yeah, my final comment is I have a physics question. When the physics question opens up, and it seemed to be like I listened to it last week, and it's like the subjects are being thrown out just one after the other after the other, and you don't get too many people responding to stuff. Is it possible to ask a question during that two-hour time frame?
Absolutely. Dr. Roy loves having participation. The more, the better. And you asking a question would be participation. He goes to the next subject because he goes to a subject. Nobody responds to it. He assumes not many people are interested because they didn't respond. And he goes to the next subject. So he's got a whole list of subjects each week that he's capable of talking to. And if anybody starts giving us a response on any one of those subjects, he's willing to stop and talk about that next subject for the next half hour or so if you want to. So can you ask a question? Absolutely. Do you want to give us a hint right now as to what the science question is going to be, Joe? Go ahead.
No, I'll wait till the proper time. But what if somebody does not have a question on the subject at hand? You're saying, yes, I've heard him say this. Does anybody have any questions or comments on the subject I've talked about? Well, maybe on that particular subject, no. And it seems like if you don't get anybody responding, you move on to the next subject. And maybe I have no questions about that one either, or anybody else does.
AC2DS?
Okay, yeah. Let me go back to Roy for a second, and Joe first. What are you suggesting as a difference, Joe? Are you suggesting that we do something differently? Oh, Joe, and then pass it over to Roy. Joe first, go ahead.
Yes, I am suggesting you do something differently. Throw out a range of subjects, and then allow maybe... Why are you transferring on top of me? One station at a time. Yeah, maybe it might be better if you say, like, open... Open up the window. Does anybody have a question or a subject they'd like to bring up on the table to be discussed instead of you throwing out a bunch of stuff that maybe nobody has any interest or questions about that your particular subject at a particular time? You know what I'm saying?
Okay, that's a suggestion. I'm hearing my voice coming out of Sheldon, but not yours. That's what everybody's been saying. Anybody listening to you by way of EchoLink or Internet or IRLP, when the signal's not coming out of Sheldon, they're not going to hear you. AC2GS, K2RIW. Go right ahead, Roy.
Thank you, Dick. Joe seems to be inferring something that I'm not saying. Usually after I do a story, I say, let me drop for any questions or comments. I don't for any questions or comments specifically on this topic and this topic alone. Most of the time, I would assume people want to discuss that topic. Once we answer the questions for that topic, you can introduce any question your heart desires, because it's not locked in, at least not as far as I'm concerned. So I never really say any questions or comments about this topic. I just say, Let me drop for any questions or comments. If people want to discuss that subject, I would prefer to do it first before the next one. But I've had times where I get someone who says, well, I just thought of something for the previous question, previous story, and so can we discuss that? So I try and be flexible.
As you can see, Joe, he goes with the flow. So it's easy for you to get your edge and word-wise and ask your question, even if it's not on the subject in discussion at that time. So you can ask your question, Joe. Over to you, Joe.
No, I'll wait to the proper time. You got other people waiting after me that checked in, that want to have their questions answered in this normal question and answer period at the beginning. I mean, tomorrow morning. I'll catch you later.
Yeah, I said that ambiguously. I wasn't telling you right now to give us your question right now. I'm just saying that when Dr. Roy is giving the science talk, you can ask your question. It's an easy way you can find a way. Okay, next person on the list is KA2YHY, Steve. And Steve, I'll discuss anything except antennas. What would you like to talk about? I'm having some fun with him. Over to you, Steve. K2YHW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good, Dick, and good evening. It's actually a perfect segue into the issue of horizontal versus vertical polarization and the experiment that we did on Friday using what we believe is a horizontally polarized UHF antenna on my car and how well it performed some 50 miles away from the repeater, if that's an appropriate subject.
Very appropriate subject, so please proceed.
Well, again, with regard to the last discussion, I think we proved fairly well that a 8-inch tall vertical antenna mounted on the roof of my car that we are fairly confident is horizontally polarized through a rather unique new design performed remarkably well, and even inside caverns and underneath overpasses, and probably the one that got me scratching my head was with all of those vertical suspension cables on the Verrazano Bridge. Of course, there was plenty of altitude there, and it was multiple wavelengths high, but there was no issues on that bridge with all the vertical wires.
Yeah, you haven't mentioned the antenna you're talking about, Joe. I mean, Steve. What we're talking about is the so-called compactenna, C-O-M-P-A-C-T-E-N-N-A. It's a rolled monopole, I think is what it's called, among other things. If you go to that website, if you simply Google that word, compact, C-O-M-P-A-C-T-E-N-N-A, you'll see the antenna. There's a VHF version, there's an HF version, and the man has a patent on the antenna itself that was issued in the last couple of years. And so to describe the antenna is a little bit difficult. Maybe you want to give that a try, Joe. I mean, Steve. Sorry, I keep calling you Joe. You've signed into the TechNet so often, so infrequently, Steve. K-A-2-Y-H-Y, K-2-R-I-W.
Very good, K2RIW in the TechNet, K-A-2YHY. Well, usually because I'm fixing somebody's camera, which I'm actually doing right now, but yeah, this is a very short in length antenna. It's dual band, compact antenna is the brand. A rolled, R-O-L, a rolled antenna. I describe it like one conductive plate of a capacitor wound with an insulator you know, in between the revolutions. And this has very interesting magnetic properties that we've are very happy to discover. And I don't know of any other one like it. There is a patent out on it, and there are a couple of papers written about this type of antenna, but it's the first time I've learned that it was available. But it's, you know, instead of a whip, it's a flat sheet that's rolled up sort of like rolling up a newspaper with one sheet, that being the radiating element, and it's vertical inside a tube of about an inch and a quarter diameter by 8 inches tall. And I was talking with Dick 50 miles from the repeater with 45 watts. So you can't argue with success, Dick.
Yeah, inch and a quarter diameter, 8 inches tall. What's actually inside that antenna is that if you start with a sheet of, let's say, aluminum, a sheet of conducting material, which is 8 inches wide and, let me pick a number, 16 inches long, and you roll it so that when you roll it up, by the way, you put a sheet of insulating material on top of it before rolling it so that each layer of the roll is not contacting the previous layer. So you roll it up in such a way that the resultant roll, you're rolling toward the 16-inch dimension, so therefore the resultant roll is 8 inches tall and you're going to vertically mount it. One piece of wire from the center conductor of your transmission line connects to the center of that roll. It's almost an end-fed zip. And I believe the antenna you're using works on both 2 meters and 450. On 2 meters, an 8-inch vertical object, when a quarter wavelength is 19 inches, it's less than an eighth wavelength. So there's very little vertical length to the antenna. It doesn't have a top hat loading capacitor or zigzagging. It's got none of the techniques that would give it vertical resonance. The sheet of material has got a lot of length. The 16-inch length in my example, I'm not sure if that's the exact number, it's rolled up. So the signal you're injecting into the antenna is being injected into the center of the roll. The roll in its multiple turns is a little bit like a solenoid coil. If I had multiple turns of a solenoid coil and I pass current through it, I make a significant magnetic field down the axis of the solenoid. And this rolled up sheet, I believe, does that. And the patent claims that. It shows you diagrams of the anticipated magnetic field. The magnetic field going right down the axis of this antenna is a vertically polarized magnetic field. So you make a strong RF vertically polarized magnetic field by the usual laws of electromagnetic transmission, where the horizontal and vertical are exactly at right angles to each other. A strong vertical magnetic field will give you horizontal polarization because it's the E field that defines the polarization. Let me drop. When you go to that website, one of the examples you'll see is that he drives a mobile automobile through tunnels and various places of downtown Los Angeles is where I think it took place, where he's got two antennas on the car, a vertical whip in the center of the roof of the car, and this rolled monopole thing on one of the corners. And those two transmission lines go into two identical receivers in the car, and you're listening to the signals coming out of those receivers, and you're looking at the display of the S-meter on those two receivers. So as he drives down bridges and tunnels and metropolitan areas, listening to a particular repeater, you see a significant difference in the signals. The rolled monopole antenna has a hell of a lot less dropouts. It's getting a stronger signal than the normal vertical whip on the car. So he's claiming that the antenna makes a better contact to the magnetic field than an ordinary antenna. That's where the benefit is. When you listen to the author's YouTube videos on the subject, he's completely missing the fact, in my opinion, that the primary radiation out of this antenna is horizontally polarized. And so horizontal polarization on VHF has better long-range DX, very different fade characteristics when you go through bridges and tunnels and you pass by man-made objects. So that's part of the explanation why, as Joe went on the, as Steve went on the Belt Parkway into areas where he normally has a dropout to the 450 repeater, 449-125, and then he went over the Verrazano Bridge, he went across to Staten Island, went onto the Outer Bridge Crossing, and into New Jersey. He was well into New Jersey before he had final dropout. Tremendous amount of range on this antenna he's getting. Exact same power. As I said, the antenna is only 8 inches tall. and an inch and a half or an inch and a quarter in diameter. How could an antenna that small have that much performance? And when you're talking to a repeater, at first let me drop the... An ordinary person would say, hey, the repeater is purely vertically polarized, whether it's a 2-meter repeater or 450, 99% of them are vertically polarized. And if you transmit a horizontal antenna, you should get no signal into it. Not true at all. The environment has a significant amount of chirality. That's a fancy way of saying when the signal bounces off of various objects in the environment, your purely horizontal polarized signal, some of it gets converted to other polarizations. And there's various ways you can prove that with a handheld mirror. But take my word for it. If you think a horizontally polarized antenna is going to give you no performance to a repeater, there's a hell of a lot of people using a purely horizontal polarized Yagi antenna talking to 2-meter and 450 repeaters, and it gets through very well. So the chirality, the polarization modification of the environment is part of the explanation. The better DX of VHF is part of the explanation. And so kind of amazing that an antenna that we believe, and the antenna patterns that are plotted, if you know what you're looking at, where they talk about the E sub phi and the E sub theta of the antenna pattern, that they are, without admitting it, talking about horizontal polarization. One of the experiments that Steve's going to do in the next couple of weeks is he's going to take some kind of a field strength monitor and actually measure the signal strength coming out of his mobile, horizontal versus vertical polarization. And I think he's going to find a significant amount of horizontal polarization. Is it purely horizontally polarized? Of course not. And by the way, every linear polarized antenna we've ever talked about, Yagis, dipoles, I'm trying to think of the name of the antenna very many people use for vertical polarization, which has got a stub alongside of it. Can't think of the name of the damn thing right now. Every antenna. Say that again.
J-pole
is what I'm talking about. So J-pole, vertically polarized antenna. Even a superstation master, your horizontal dipole, your Yagi, whatever. If you carefully measure the exact polarization coming out of it, it is never purely linear polarized. There's always a little bit of the orthogonal polarization. So to some degree, every antenna we have ever used has a certain ellipticity ratio. There's a slightly elliptical polarization coming out of it. No antenna is purely linear polarized, with rare exception. So that's part of what's going on. I'm going to turn it over to you, Joe. I mean, here we go. Sorry about that, Steve. So we're extremely amazed. I mean, he's driving through the normal dropout area of the Belt Parkway, and there was getting no dropout. He was almost dead full quiet in that area. Went around the loop to get onto the entrance to Verrazano Bridge, went over the Verrazano, went over to Staten Island. Only when he was going along the Staten Island Parkway, Staten Island has got a hogback that is a north-south hogback, and he was on the far side of that mountain in Staten Island. So along the Staten Island Expressway, the signal was marginal until he got to the Outer Bridge. Outer Bridge is essentially a causeway. It's not a very high bridge. And he was very loud on that. And it's not until he got a number of miles into New Jersey that he finally had a dropout. K-A-2-Y-H-Y, K-2-L-I-W. And it was a buddy of yours that bought this antenna, described to you how superior its performance was. Therefore, you went and bought one, and you've confirmed it. Over to you, Steve, K-2-L-I-W in the TechNet.
Yeah, that is correct, Dick. The antenna was discovered by Peter, KC2KKX, who... his daily commute is from Westchester into Manhattan with many dropouts along the way due to terrain. And when he got the new, this antenna, he did a very similar test 2 days in a row with his commute in the morning, and no more dropouts. And with that successful experiment, I ordered one and has been using it for several weeks, and it was the test that we did Friday that really was the proof in the pudding. And, you know, I don't know of any other horizontally polarized mobile antennas, at least not for UHF. and this is the first one that, you know, I'm learning about, and I think you're right on the money, and that's the reason for the excellent performance. But what we have not answered, or at least you partially answered it, but at least not to my satisfaction quite yet, is how does this thing create the horizontal polarization as opposed to an ordinary, you know, dual-band whip antenna? K2RIW, KA2YHY.
There are a couple of horizontally polarized mobile antennas. Hula Hoop, Cloverleaf. They're very unpopular. But they are purely horizontal in appearance and radiation. Under ordinary circumstances, a so-called magnetic loop antenna, where you set up the loop parallel, the plane of the loop parallel to the Earth, that would be a horizontally polarized antenna. And if the loop itself is a small fraction of a wavelength in circumference, then the loop will be rather omnidirectional, but very difficult to resonate it because it's such a small fraction of a wavelength of circumference. That's the usual way of doing it. None of us have had the nerve to do it, but there's nothing magic about making a magnetic loop antenna with only one turn. There's nothing stopping us from making it a five-turn loop. Five turns of wire and made as a solenoid coil, and you pass current through that wire, you obviously get a magnetic field right down the axis of that solenoid. And as long as you've got the right kind of insulation in the wire, there's nothing stopping you from taking those five turns and collapsing them. You could make a horizontal polarized loop antenna of multiple turns, and it would be easier to resonate. And if you first made it out of 14-gauge wire, you'd have a certain bandwidth. If you then made it out of 8-gauge wire, you'd have greater bandwidth. There's a universal law of antennas. Whenever you increase the diameter of the radiating element, you get greater bandwidth. Well, in this case, you can't get any greater bandwidth than making the equivalent diameter of the wire triple zero. When your wire is a sheet of material, it's wound up like the multi-turn loop of wire. When it's a sheet of material, as far as the equivalent diameter, it's huge. That's part of the reason this antenna is extremely broad band. Your antenna, I believe, works on 2 meters and 450. You haven't had a chance to use it on 2 meters yet. Is that true, Steve? Over to you, Steve, K2RIW.
Oh, yes, I've used it on 2 meters on this repeater quite a bit, and haven't done an extensive test like this, but perhaps we should. But yes, I found very good results as well. Or at least I should say, nothing worse than the regular whip I had before.
AC2GS? Roy recognized. I'm going to go over to Roy in a minute. But to answer Steve's previous question that I didn't answer, multiple turns of an antenna where the turns are, each individual turn is parallel to the Earth, and you pass current through it, RF current or steady state current, doesn't matter. It will make a vertically polarized, strong magnetic field on the operating frequency. A purely vertically polarized magnetic field, because of what Mother Nature does, you radiate that magnetic field. After you get a couple of wavelengths away from the antenna, Mother Nature straightens it all out. She sees the vertical polarization of the magnetic field. Mother Nature will create the horizontal component. RF energy is always magnetic field and E field that are exactly 90 degrees away from each other, orthogonal to each other. So even though the antenna seems to have no substantial amount of visual real estate in the horizontal polarization mode, this thing is launching that strong vertical magnetic field, which becomes a horizontally polarized wave primarily when radiated. When Steve does his experiment of measuring polarization with a field strength meter, he's going to see some vertical in there, but I'm predicting the vertical polarization is going to be substantially weaker than the horizontal polarization. Every antenna's got some slightly elliptical polarization. This particular antenna, I'm going to make a guess, 90%, at least on 2 meters, 90% is going to be horizontal and maybe 10% vertical. In the case of 450, the antenna is coming closer to a quarter wavelength, and now there's going to be a little bit more magnetic, there's going to be a little bit more vertical polarization. I still think there's going to be a dominant amount of horizontal. I know that Roy is a bit skeptical of all this, and so Roy's going to give us his point of view. AC2GS, K2RIW. Go ahead, Roy.
Thank you, Dick. I'm not that skeptical about it in practice. I'm very skeptical of it in theory. And I just wanted to mention that magnetic loops often have two loops.